Greetings and welcome to Tales from the Otherwood, a podcast exploring the folk tales and folklore of the East Midlands and beyond. I'm Dylan Knight, and I'll be your guide as we take one of the many paths in this magical, ever-changing woodland. The roots of the Otherwood find themselves reaching out down toward the southernmost lands of the East Midlands in Northamptonshire. When coming face to face with the supernatural, most people are completely bewildered by what they have just encountered. Some would even go into outright denial of what has just happened. Others would perhaps make a run for it, or call upon their chosen deity to help them in some way. This particular tale has a rather different and wily approach of dealing with scary beings of the threatening kind. Tales from the Otherwood presents The Farmer and the Boggart. Once, long ago, there was a farmer who had a bit of land. It wasn't a tiny piece of land like a small allotment or anything. It was just a couple of fields. He wasn't a rich farmer, and he grew just enough to keep his family fed, when one day, as the farmer was working, he found he wasn't alone in the field, and was disturbed in his work by a gruff voice.
"Oi, you! This is my land, this is!"
The farmer turned to the source of the voice, expecting it to belong to some disgruntled neighbour, and was about to give him what for, until he found he was looking not at a fellow human being, but at a grisly-looking boggart. Now, there's no such thing as a typical boggart, but this one was particularly tall, hairy, and had long pointed ears and rows of small horns running along its head. And right now, it was looking very menacing indeed.
"You're staring," says the boggart. "You're going to clear off, or do I need to bash your brains in?"
The farmer wasn't just staring. He was thinking. Now he knew why the land was so cheap.
"Sorry," said the farmer. "I just didn't expect to see you. Thing is, you've been gone for so long that no one thought this land belonged to you anymore," he explained.
"Well, it does. Now get lost," growled the boggart.
"I could," says the farmer. "Or we can make a deal. I could carry on growing what I plant, do all the work, and give you half the crop."
The boggart, stroking its chin, seemed quite pleased with this, and the farmer continued.
"You get to choose. Do you want the tops, or do you want the bottoms?"
What do you mean?" asks the boggart.
"Well, you get the first pick. You can either have what grows on the top, or what grows in the bottom."
"Fair's fair." The boggart had to think about this and scratch its tufty horned head.
"I'll have the tops then."
And with that, the farmer assures the boggart he'll see it at harvest time in the autumn. What the farmer hadn't told the boggart was that he had planted turnips this year, so when it came to digging them up, the farmer kept all the turnips for himself and his family, and there was quite a lot, more than his family needed, and even enough to take some to the market too. The time came for the boggart to collect its dues, and the boggart wasn't best pleased after being handed a basket full of turnip leaves, but it had made an agreement and then growled,
"Next year, you'll have the tops and I'll have the bottoms."
"Fair's fair,"
the farmer agreed, and he watched as the boggart went off into the bushes with his basket full of leaves and dirt. The next year, the farmer had planted wheat, and as the crop was a particularly good one, the last of it was being taken away in a cart, and it was at this point the boggart turned up and looked even more dismayed when the farmer handed him a huge sack full of roots and stubble. The boggart was about to give the farmer what for when it heard the strangest thing. Singing. People were singing in the fields. some kind of song about ploughing and sowing and health to the master, which didn't make much sense to the boggart, as he couldn't see any masters in rich clothes. But they did seem to be praising the farmer, yet he was as scruffy as they come. The boggart was even more surprised when some of the singing people seemed to welcome it into their celebrations and give it some beer to enjoy. They danced and got the boggart to join in, until it fell over and then went to go off and sulk in a dark corner, until all the revellers had gone home. The farmer came over and asked, "Did you enjoy our harvest home?"
"Shut up about that," says the boggart. "Next year, we'll both have tops. We'll reap together, and we keep what we cut."
"All right," says the farmer. "I'll agree to that."
"Fair's fair.
Make sure you're here at dawn. We'll start early. See you next year." The farmer watched as the boggart struggled to find its way through the bushes, even chuckling to himself that the boggart obviously isn't used to beer. The next year, the farmer had grown wheat again, and the crop was an even better one. The field was the colour of gold because there were so many wheat sheaves. A few days before harvest, he went to the blacksmith and had some iron rods made, and these he placed all along one half of the field, all in good time for the reaping. Come the morning of the harvest, the boggart came before dawn and took one of the scythes offered by the farmer. Both scythes were nice and sharp.
"Right," said the farmer. "We'll begin when the bell strikes and we'll carry on until midday. No stopping. Agreed?"
"Agreed," said the boggart. "Which half is mine?" it asked.
And the farmer explained. "Well, as you're standing there, that's your half, and this one's my half. Unless you want to swap."
"Oh, no, you don't," exclaimed the boggart. "You must think I'm stupid. You're only trying to trick me somehow, so I'll keep my half."
"Fair's fair," said the farmer.
The sun was now beginning to climb from the horizon, turning the sky paler shades of blue tinged with orange. The church bell struck five, and both the farmer and the boggart started using their scythes to cut down the wheat. The farmer was cutting his wheat down nice and quick, gathering a good pace. The boggart was cutting some of its own wheat down, but found that some of the wheat was tough, really tough. Tough enough to stop his scythe in its cutting.
"Some hard docks here," it said. "Some really hard docks."
The farmer just kept on going, whereas the boggart hadn't even cut a third of what the farmer was doing. And when the boggart lifted up the scythe to look at it, it saw that the blade had been battered. It wasn't like that when they had started. What kind of wheat were they cutting?
"I need to whiffle waffle,"
the boggart called out as the farmer was quite ahead now. Whiffle waffle meaning to sharpen a blade with a whetstone and oil.
"Nope," said the farmer. "We said no stopping until midday. Remember?"
They both carried on until the sun was high in the sky and it dried out the dew upon the ground. The boggart looked down at its own measly cut wheat and jagged scythe blade and saw how much the farmer had cut down. The boggart was all hot and bothered and its hands were beginning to feel sore.
"Stop!" yelled the boggart. "You can keep your ruddy land. I've had enough of it and of you. And don't say fair's flipping fair."
With that, the boggart threw down the scythe to the ground and stomped off once more into the bushes and was never seen again. Right. Storytelling is thirsty work. Time for a cup of tea, I think. Put on the kettle or crack open your flask. It's time for a drink and a chat. I'd first come across this story about 9 years ago when I got myself a copy of Alan Garner's Collected Folk Tales. I was on a road trip to Glastonbury with some friends of mine, and we went to Stonehenge as part of the journey. Seeing the book in the gift shop, I knew I just had to have it. Flicking through the book, some stories immediately stayed with me, and others were stored away for another day. It wasn't until several years later that I read Folk Tales of the East Midlands by Eric Swift, and I knew the story had seemed familiar somehow. And when I read Kevin Mannering's The Farmer and the Bogle from his Folk Tales of Northamptonshire, this backed up what I'd read before. All three versions of the same tale have some slight differences between them, but that's the magic of storytelling. A story told is never the exact same as another telling it. In Garner's version, the creature is described as a brownie. In Swift's, it's a boggard. And in Mannering's, it's a bogle. A brownie is often a fairy-type creature or sprite, often linked to a house or a barn, and performs all kinds of tasks, amongst which includes typical household chores, sometimes repairs which need to be carried out, or even the clearing away of items that are found out of their original places. And usually, the household reward this brownie with a saucer of milk for their efforts. Interestingly enough, an offering of milk is thought to be one of the oldest offerings to spirits of various kinds. A bogle is usually described as a goblin, a phantom, or even a ghost, and most likely this is a variation of the word boggard or boggart, which may or may not come from the Welsh booga or pooka, very similar to the Irish pooka. Both names for a spirit that could shapeshift into different animal types and was said to be either benign in nature or totally mischievous. Another source could be the Old English poochel. Either way, both pooka and poochel could have lent themselves to the Shakespearean puck, another mischievous sprite more famously known as Robin Goodfellow. It could be more likely that the Cornish name for this type of household entity, booker, is what later became boggart or boggard. And curiously, we see this in everyday English, with the term bugger being applied as a substitute swear word if something goes wrong, or be applied to a person making themselves a nuisance, as in, you cheeky bugger. In Nottinghamshire, the term applied for this kind of behaviour is to call that person a bogger, something my wife often calls our cats. Just saying. Anyway, getting back on track. Unlike the creature described in the Harry Potter series, a boggart does not assume the shape of its victim's worst fears. That interpretation only belongs to the works of J.K. Rowling. But if she took influence from the Irish and Welsh myths of a shape-shifting creature, we can see how she would have adapted it for her books. Simon Young from the Boggart and Banshee podcast makes the case that a boggart is not even a species of paranormal entity. His argument is that boggart is simply a term that can be applied to describe any supernatural creature, especially in the north of England. The term boggart could be applied to a ghost, a spectral black dog, a tiny red man, an imp. Basically, any apparition encountered can be described as a boggart. It doesn't matter what you're witness to, whatever supernatural being or creature you've come across, you would just tell everyone, I've just seen a boggart. We aren't sure what type of being this particular boggart is, but it seems rather attached to this bit of land that the farmer now owns, and it seems to come from and disappear into the bushes or local woodland. This presents another angle to be considered. What if the boggart was in fact the spirit of the place, the genius loci of the field itself? In ancient belief, each tree and place was thought to have its own individual spirit, and it is to this particular spirit that offerings would be made to either ensure a good harvest or even keep it appeased so it brought no harm or protected the homestead? If true, then could the boggart simply have been the genius Loki? In this case, the spirit of the field now awake and demanding its tribute. If so, then the story would be less of one about a bullying creature and more about a spirit simply trying to claim what only belongs to it by right. In fact, while reading this story, I felt kind of sorry for the boggart, who was only trying to reclaim its land and was manipulated by the crafty farmer who lastly employed iron rods to trick the boggart into thinking the grain was too strong for it to cut down. As discussed in The Woodman and the Hatchet, I mentioned iron was traditionally viewed as being a bane to fairies. And by that, I mean iron was said to have warded off and hurt fairy and otherworldly creatures. Yet, both tales don't have their individual supernatural beings actually touch the iron directly. The iron rods themselves didn't repel the boggart away, but the cunning of the farmer did, using the rods to confound the efforts of the boggart in order for it to get so frustrated it just simply leaves. Perhaps the legends of iron being a fairy bane have been misunderstood, or it could just simply be that this being wasn't affected by iron in that particular way, and its real weakness was just the sharp mind and quick wits of the farmer. One unique point that was brought up in the Eric Swift version of the story was the concept of the harvest home. Indeed, the people celebrating even include the boggart in their revels. Harvest home was the name given to the celebration of the harvesting of cereal crops such as wheat, oats, barley and rye. The concept of celebrating the harvest goes back to records going back to medieval times. The cutting of the crop took a lot of people, and throughout Great Britain, the workers were normally rewarded with bread, cheese, beer and sometimes meat. This changed throughout the ages, and different regions celebrated in different ways. Some would have celebratory drinks before cutting the harvest, others were paid with money, or in other counties, money and beer. There were parts of the UK that had customs and celebrations around the last sheaf being cut, some places having dolls being made from the last sheaf, for example, or once the workers had reached it. They would then start shouting out loud to declare their victory and begin taunting their rival fields. Here in the East Midlands, however, it was customary to celebrate the harvest home with the last load being carried by cart. By the 18th and 19th centuries, this cart would be decorated with flowers and ribbons, and the driver of the cart would often encourage the horse to pull as quick as they can to avoid both themselves and the last crop from getting drenched by the community throwing pails of water at them. If the driver was successful, this was seen as a rite of passage of sorts, but even if not, the act itself was the beginning of the harvest feast or harvest home. Songs would be sung, namely about the harvest being ploughed and of good health to either the farmer or local lord. It was perhaps these songs the boggart heard when the people invited it to join in the frolics and merrymaking. Where Northamptonshire differs from the other counties of the East Midlands is that those who cause problems for other team members cutting the fields, or perhaps lagging behind, were gathered up and thrashed by their fellows. As the farmer's deception was to show how hard the crop was and how he could easily cut it down, I'd say the boggart got off lightly. Otherwise, if it had stayed, the farmer would have had to give it a thorough beating. What do you think? Was the boggart a bully that deserved to be duped? Or was it a reawakened spirit that was fooled out of its own territory by a devious farmer? Stories, tales, myths and legends are very much like the creatures of which they tell. They're in the shadows of our consciousness, mutable and hidden in the depths of the other wood. Tales from the Other Wood was written and produced by me, Dylan Knight. If you could please leave a review of this podcast wherever you listen to it, I'd appreciate that a lot. Thank you for listening, and remember, stay safe and watch out for unexpected boggarts and quick-thinking farmers.